Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Consilio's Better Places podcast, where I'm absolutely delighted to announce we are going transatlantic today. And joining us is Jessica Tarlov, one of, if not the leading Democratic commentators in the United States. Jessica, thank you for joining us.
It's a bold introduction. Leading Democratic commentators. Yeah, cool. Great. Leaning in. It's great to be here. And it's nice to see you after so many years. Yeah,
it's been a few years, hasn't it? With me today is my colleague Sedge, who's going to be kind of leading on the questions today. And really, this came about because Jessica, you and I used to work together a long, long time ago in London. And I always like to say, when America sneezes, Britain catches a cold. You know, we do tend to follow American politics far more than anything in Europe, even though it's just next door. But that's just the way it is. And the rise of Mandami, he's so famous now, you just need one word, really, everyone knows who he is, has really kind of
Madonna politics.
Yeah, it's captured people's attention massively over here in the UK, and especially London, where we're just wondering to explore with you if there could be any parallels which kind of the left in politics could learn from what Mandami's done in New York. And instead, you're going to ask the first set of questions.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great to know from your perspective why you actually think Mamdani won, because obviously we see it very differently here to how you guys experience it. And I think it's just interesting to know whether it's a genuine shift on the left, rise in socialism, or it's just a product of very sort of US specific conditions, whether that be the Eric Adams cronyism scandals, sort of anti-Trump sentiment.
So I think it's a mix of things. And so I'm a New Yorker. Mamdani is my mayor now. I did not vote for Mamdani and am kind of part of a pretty sizable chunk of moderate Democrats in New York, especially Jewish New Yorkers who didn't take to him the way that others did. And I don't want to make it out like all the Jews voted against him, because that is not the case. He got about 30% of the vote, but it's usually 60 to 65%. And there were very real concerns about past rhetoric and perspective on Israel and what's going on over there, calling it a genocide, things that were just making Jews a little suspicious of what a Mamdani administration would look like. So I was a disappointed voter, which I would say was the majority sentiment of people who went to the polls. We really felt that the establishment, this is only audio, but I'm using quotes, that the core of the party did not field a decent candidate. And it is very possible that Mamdani still could have risen to the top. It was an unbelievable campaign that, even though I didn't vote for him, I was actually still excited to see him win, because there was so much energy. There was so much human connection. It felt like a return to Obama vibes, when hope and change meant something and people understood what a politician stood for and felt like that they were actually going to fight tooth and nail for them. And we desperately need that. And so I'm happy in that sense. But a lot of us felt like the normie Dems just didn't bother to recruit someone decent, or the folks that could have done it, like Richie Torres. I don't know if you guys know him, but he's a congressman for the South Bronx who has one of the most diverse, if not the most diverse, district in the country. So he has the poorest Americans. He has the highest number of folks on Medicaid, but he also is the congressman for Riverdale, which has this huge modern Orthodox population. So he really is a mixed bag there and is very pro-Israel, which folks were looking for. Dan Goldman, who is my congressman, who is one of the lead impeachment managers in Donald Trump's first impeachment. People also were looking to him to see if he would run. Jessica Tisch, who is the police commissioner, was someone that the kind of technocratic left wanted, like that she could be another Bloomberg type candidate. I wouldn't be surprised if she ran down the line, but didn't feel ready to do it now. So there were all these names percolating where people thought, okay, well, maybe if so-and-so gets in. And then we ended up with Andrew Cuomo, which was an abject disaster. Right. And so I don't want to, I always say this, and then people who love Mamdani get mad at me. I don't want to minimize what Mamdani accomplished, but there were a confluence of factors that came together in this election that is not the usual situation. So someone polling at 1% going on to win the election doesn't typically happen unless everybody else who's running is terrible. And that's the conditions that we had.
You mentioned the human connection there and the kind of return to hope and change, which I think is what came across to us just looking from afar, not looking at kind of the macro granular detail on the ground. And, you know, it's how much of a success do you think was about being able to utilize modern technology? Because if people focus on that, he's the TikTok mayor. Okay, but you've got to say something as well, rather than just being on a platform. So the message and the platform in this candidate just seem to come together. And honestly, the way people speak about him over here, it has that Obama vibe.
So when you said that it has that Obama vibe, I was thinking the exact same. Like, my first exposure was on social media of Mamdani, and you know, the sort of short skits he does, the quite fun, like very
horizontal.
Yeah, targeted.
Or is it vertical? Wait, no, it's the vertical that he does and everyone else does. So horizontal. Yeah, sorry.
And he very targeted towards sort of the Gen Z voter. I think that's the sort of experience we have of him over here.
Yeah, definitely.
So the digital strategist behind this campaign did an incredible job. They also had the genuine article, right, as the candidate, someone who naturally feels this. He's 34 years old, so a young millennial, old Gen Z, depending on how you do it. But it's more than just the medium. He is transcendent, and he is charming and hyper-focused on what New Yorkers, but really Americans, and I think Londoners as well, want to hear, which is, I care about you, and I'm not interested in playing any games. You know, people tried to pull him into culture war issues, and besides Israel, which I don't even know if that counts as a culture war issue, he just wasn't having it. Like, it didn't come across his screen, essentially. If someone would ask him a question that was clearly a rabbit hole, he would get back to affordability. And affordability, which is, you know, the new way of talking about how much money is in your pocket. And, you know, now it's being used in elections all over the country, even for more conservative Democratic candidates like Abigail Spanberger, who's the new governor of Virginia, Mikey Sherrill, the new governor of New Jersey. They all ran affordability campaigns, but Mamdani was really the one that hit it the best. And I think that his rhetoric was this amazing blend of aggressive but not hostile towards uber rich, because there's something going on here. And I think it's true in London as well, because I lived in London for my 20s, and my best girlfriends are still there. And they're in this same boat where they are, by any normal standard, rich, right? Like, their household is making £300,000, £400,000, £500,000 plus cumulative. But they have two kids, and London is soaringly expensive, the same way that it is here in New York City. And so there's this new group of people who are sitting around the dinner table every night, and they're having fancy takeout, right? Like, these aren't people living paycheck to paycheck and eating baked beans, but they are feeling like they won't be able to get ahead, that they won't be able to stay in the city that they love, a lot of them who grew up there, that they won't be able to pass money down to their kids, and that generational wealth is the only way that people now can live a certain quality of life. And Mamdani captured all of that. He has great lines about how he doesn't think, you know, billionaires should be able to exist. And I think for a lot of us, we're like, okay, I get it. It's a little Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, everyone says stuff like that. But he spoke to this kind of sandwiched rich person who, if you look at a global chart, is obviously doing exceptionally well, but has real financial struggles to be able to stay in the city in which they are employed, and how wrong that is. And I wanted to say something else about the social media point that you made. So obviously he was going viral, everything that he did, you know, starting with that halal cart when he said his policy would be that a halal meal, you know, wouldn't be over $8. But he also had so many important in-person events, and one really stuck out to me. He ran this enormous scavenger hunt that started at Union Square, which is a big hub here in New York City, and had thousands of people turn out to go on this hunt together. And the Times wrote a big piece about the vibes that the Mamdani campaign was cultivating. And something that was so important was in-person community. We talk a lot about these communities that are built online and how fantastic it is that we're all connected to people over all over the world. He knows that everyone from 18-year-olds up to senior citizens are facing a loneliness epidemic. And he wanted to create a campaign where you felt like you were physically a part of something, not just that you were, you know, smashing that retweet button or posting on TikTok. And I think that that was so central to why he was able to win and to captivate so many people who might not have been a supporter of his politics, but thought this is really the best of us and what you want politics to be.
It's interesting you mentioned kind of that sandwich group on quite a high salary. But what we're also noticing here in London, where, and, you know, it's clearly not a direct read across to say, you know, Zach Polanski is the Mandami and the Green Party is good. So it's not a direct read across. However, what we are seeing is graduates, especially, moving to look at something other than the established left, I think would be how I would describe it. Now, there's the acronym Avocado, Aggrieved Victims of Crushing Debt Obligations. And we always think over here, maybe it's a generational thing for me being a bit older, and I'm old enough to remember when we had grants, not loans at university. It was quite a long time ago. So we don't think in the UK that our student debt position as bad as America, because we always hear horror stories, which are quite accurate, of hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of debt. But UK students are leaving uni with £50,000 debt, which is not uncommon, is it, Sid, for people you know and your friend?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. With like a 6% interest rate pre-2023, which I think now it's about 3.2%. Yeah. But I think it's interesting what you said about sort of American debt, because I think to us here, it's sort of handed to us in a silver plate. It's very accessible, the student loans are. So now, I was just the other day, I was reading a story of someone that started paying their student loan in 2021 and they were on £57,000, and now the debt's risen to £77,000. And I think it's sort of similar to what you said regarding that sort of sandwiched, wealthy group of people. But I think this, with sort of young graduates, especially somewhere like London, it's just, the cost of living is just like through the roof. I think that tied in with sort of social issues really drives sort of like the campaign of like Zach Polanski, leader of the Green Party here. I think it's just an overall thing of crossing traditional party loyalty, and it's just overarching like shared unfairness ideology, whether that be social issues as well as cost of living and wealth issues. And I think Mamdani and Zach Polanski both do that very well in terms of, like you said, just honing in on the affordability, and circling back to that when there's all this wider noise on like culture wars and things like that.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I didn't mean to talk about Mamdani's win as only people who by national or global standards are wealthy. I was just trying to explain how he built such a broad coalition of voters, because a lot of people who don't want their taxes raised, you know, who fit into his brackets where that would go up, still supported him. But you're totally right. And I think for a recent grad who is emerging and their debt is just accumulating, and I remember what it was like because I graduated from university in England. So the affordability thing obviously cuts through to that. But he also had this other line of argumentation, which I imagine the Greens are using as well, which is these cities don't belong to you, talking about like the uber rich. Like these cities are rooted in working class people and they're supposed to be for us. And that doesn't mean you can't be here, but it also doesn't mean that we can't be here. And, you know, we can talk about the hypocrisy of the, you know, he grew up very wealthy and he lives in, I think his apartment's like a couple million dollar apartment in Chelsea and he's moving to Gracie Mansion. But I, you know, he really understood that. And he did this one thing, and stop me if all of these like examples of what he did are not that interesting. But there was a day towards the end of the election and it looked like he was going to win pretty handedly because the Republican candidate and Cuomo had not consolidated properly. I do think Cuomo would have won if Curtis Sliwa, who ran as the Republican, had dropped out in an appropriate amount of time. But Mamdani got up and showed up at LaGuardia, one of our airports, at like 4 o'clock in the morning to talk to the cab drivers who are there. And he did a video about it. And said, you know, it is these people that are silently making our city work and they never get the spotlight, right? Like there, no one notices them. They come in and out. They commute hours to be able to get here. They spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get their medallion. And you guys have the same thing with the black cabs versus the Uber economy. And I thought it was such an important statement on where his priorities were. It was with the working people. And a lot of these grads, while, you know, they just graduated from college, so higher aspiration, I'm sure, than being a taxi driver. A lot of them come from families like that, right? First generation, second generation to go to college, that they have debt for a reason. They didn't have families that could pay for them just to zoom through university. And these left-leaning parties are noticing that the, for you guys, that Labor and Conservative and the Lib Dems to some degree are becoming basically two sides to the same coin, I would say. Like in the US, Republicans and Democrats, that coin is huge, and it's a very different thing because of how our social issues work here. But you could make the argument, and Mamdani did very effectively, that everyone in mainstream politics is just owned by corporations, right? Like that they're all rich people who have forgotten what it looks like, you know, to be a regular Joe that has crushing student debt and is on their first or second job, who's scared about having a child, that they can't afford it. You know, a lot is made fun of the left, you know, that they don't want to have kids because of climate change and things like that. People just straight up don't think that they can afford to have children. And we have a fertility crisis, or I shouldn't say a fertility crisis. We have what's the word for it? We have a birth crisis. We have a population crisis all over the world because of this.
People can't afford it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, actually, just strikes me that really reform in the UK, and one could argue the more populist side of the Republican Party, is taking the same approach of portraying the existing parties as a blob. That's the words they use, blob. And they're on the right. And on the left, Mamdani seems to have tapped into that on an affordability point. And these people don't understand you, in a sense. It's quite interesting.
I think with the amount of Tories going to reform,
that's true.
It's hard for them to make that argument.
That's true. That's true.
I think one final question we really wanted to ask you, which I think I probably know the sort of answer you're going to give now, is if you were advising a left-wing candidate in the UK trying to break through today, what would your three key pieces of advice be?
Be very visible, you know, be everywhere, but in person and on social.
Yeah.
Listen to people. Like, you know, on camera and off camera, a lot of people do that as a stunt. I mean, here in the US, these town halls matter a lot. I'm not sure how much they matter in your politics. You know, I haven't worked on a UK campaign in a long time, and I don't think it was as much of a thing, but the constituent work really, really makes a difference. And then find a way to run against the system from within the system. So things are not going to change as much as people want them to. And I get a lot of flack for this. I mean, I have a podcast called Raging Moderates. Yeah. And everything is like, oh, Jessica Tarlov, you know, she doesn't dream big. She doesn't believe in what's possible, et cetera. And, you know, I'm more conservative on the more conservative side of my party. But Mamdani was able to get the support of the mainstream and the left by really effectively running against the system within the system. That's what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez does as well. Bernie Sanders, who's an independent senator, right, but caucuses with Democrats, right? Like, he's a reliable Democratic vote, but there's something about him that's delineated as different, and people right now are gravitating towards different. That's how we ended up with Trump. Like, he just was like, I am going to crush the system, and I'm going to, quote unquote, drain the swamp. Right now, he is fully the swamp, but no one is voting for the status quo. I don't know a single person that's interested in it. And it's been really fascinating to watch a lot of mainstream politicians rebrand themselves, you know, as a maverick, as someone who's really different. And so I would, those would be my three pieces of advice, and stay away from anything that's not a kitchen table issue. Yeah. I think it's the fourth piece of advice. People don't care. Like, it was really interesting. There was, in one of the exit polls after the 2024 election, looking at the amount of people who had a difference of opinion with Kamala Harris on core culture war issues, everything from abortion to trans athletes. And she still won a plurality of them. Like, people can accept that if you are giving them what they want, and most of what they want is an economic agenda that is fair, and that they feel like they can not only get ahead, but that other people in their community will be lifted up. I think people are much more generous than we give them credit for and concerned with their community. We're seeing that right now with what's going on with immigration enforcement and how people are banding together. And Mamdani has even been making the argument that what's going on with immigration enforcement is an economic issue, because he is laser focused on affordability.
Brilliant. And I think that's certainly something we're going to see more and more of over the coming years in the UK and London, and probably be the main issue in the London election. So, Jessica, just want to say thank you very much for giving us your time today. That absolutely fascinates. Yeah. The rise of Mamdani and the parallels with potentially Zach Polanski and the Greens here is certainly what people are talking about. So great to get your insights. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.